I'm Marty Moscoane, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Drivers for Uber and Lyft staged work stoppages on Wednesday in major cities around the world, protesting low pay, deteriorating working conditions, and broken promises. Here in Philadelphia, about 80 protesters rallied in front of the Uber Greenlight Hub near the airport, organized by the Philadelphia Drivers Union and the Philadelphia Limousine Association. There's nothing new about workers striking, but organizing in the gig economy has its unique challenges. Joining us is Todd Wolfson. He's professor of journalism and media studies at Rutgers University, co-director of the Media Inequality and Change Center, or MIKE Center, and he is a longtime collaborator with the Taxi Workers Alliance of Pennsylvania, here to talk about organizing in the gig economy. Todd Wolfson, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
And to our listeners, lines open at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Well, talking about this work stoppage or this strike on Wednesday, and it was not just in Philly, but across the country and actually around parts of the world. Was it successful from your perspective?
Yeah, I think it was very successful. I think you'll hear people say that it didn't crash markets. So Philadelphia was still operating. People could still get their Ubers maybe a minute or two longer. But an action at this level of workers that are so disaggregated is a huge step forward. And the fact that it wasn't only across the U.S., but rather had touchdown spots across the globe is just very impactful and bodes well for workers standing up in this new gig economy.
And I do want to talk about all of that, but I think we need to define what the gig economy is, just to make sure everyone knows or is on the same page.
Right. I mean, people have gotten work by the gig since time immemorial. And in fact, in the early days, one of the big fights was to move from getting work by the gig to getting work, getting daily wages to getting annual wages. So that's been a long fight. But the new gig economy, maybe we could call it, is people who are getting work usually mediated through their phone, and they're being paid by the task. And then there's still multiple types of gig work within that. There's people who are designing, creating a design for somebody in China, so very distanced. But then there's on-demand, geographically bound gig economy, which is what we're seeing the most action from. And that's people who are doing work on demand, you know, somebody picking you up in an Uber, somebody dropping off your food, a domestic worker, who are being hired by on-demand and are geographically located.
And the phone is the conduit, right?
And the phone is absolutely the conduit.
And as you said, there's nothing new, but what is new is this technology.
It's definitely the technology itself is new. And I think at a meta level, what's also new is, or not new, but a new problem we're facing is the rollback of workers' rights within this milieu.
Right. Well, and I think the Uber Lyft protests, which their complaints are about working conditions, about wages, about broken promises, on and on and on from there. And on the one hand, yes, you can organize people using social media. But can you make the kind of changes that these workers want through social media?
I think this is the struggle we're going to watch unfold to come. So in some places, workers are making huge gains. So in the UK, Uber drivers have taken Uber to court, and they actually won worker status. And in the UK, there's three statuses: employees, independent contractors, and between workers. They won in court, they beat two appeals, and they're going to the Supreme Court. And if they win that, all workers who drive for Uber will be classified as workers. They'll get minimum wage, they'll get paid holiday, and they'll have collective bargaining rights. In the US, it's not quite that simple because we only have two classifications, independent contractors and workers. And so this or employees, so the struggle will look a little bit, it'll go on a little bit longer, but I do think there's real possibility for them to win real gains. Just from the May 8th protests, we saw Uber settle with a bunch of drivers, 60,000 drivers who've said they've been misclassified. Uber has now announced a settlement since the strikes on Wednesday. So we saw huge gains already, and they put aside, I think, $130 million to pay out those claims.
And in New York City, if you're a driver, Uber driver, or maybe even a Lyft driver, a driver as well, you do get paid. I mean, it's New York City, $16-17 an hour, something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. So they passed a set of bills about last summer, which both set a wage floor for Uber and Lyft drivers, mm-hmm. and also capped the number of cars coming into the city. Some of that's still being worked out, but yes, they did. And that came on the heels, it should be marked, of a wave, an epidemic of cab drivers and Uber drivers that killed themselves because of the conditions in New York City, some of them very explicitly saying they could not make a living. Right. And I think somebody self-immolated actually at City Hall.
Self-immolated.
In City Hall, by City Hall in New York City. So wow. So the response by the city was based on what was a real crisis, and a crisis that's going to spread. It's not just going to be in New York City.
It's interesting you said Uber drivers and taxi drivers, because I think we often think they're either in competition or sort of represent different parts of our economy.
They don't.
They don't.
And often somebody is driving for Uber on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday and driving a cab on Tuesday and Thursday. So, I mean, I think what we've seen in New York is the organizing that passed those bills was organizing that connected cab drivers to Uber drivers and built a very powerful kind of coalition. And hopefully as we move forward, we'll see coalitions like that because they're both suffering in this economy.
And is the future more gig work? I mean, is that what you see as you look into your crystal ball?
Yes. I mean, I think that's the danger in front of us. It's not only, I mean, the economists who have studied this will tell you that the numbers are pretty small of gig workers right now, maybe 1%. Right. They vary. But what the real danger is them setting a model for how work is understood in the generations to come so that our children and our children's children don't expect the kind of benefits, a 40-hour week, getting health care on the job, getting benefits with the job, having collective bargaining rights. They won't expect those things. So the real danger is resetting how we understand work.
I would assume for some gig workers, it is what they want. That they, you know, they want some extra money, some disposable cash. They're not looking for a full-time job with benefits, but they want some flexibility in their work-home life, if I can put it that way.
Absolutely. So I think even if you just look at Uber and Lyft drivers, you'll see a slight majority that are doing it part-time.
Right.
Maybe they're making extra money or they're in school and they're paying bills, etc. And then a minority, but only a slight minority that are doing it full-time. But the minority that are doing it full-time do the large majority of the rides for these companies. So, and they're the ones that are suffering the most. I think the people who are doing it part-time are happier with the job, tend to have less grievance generally.
Because they're not looking to make a living off it. They're looking to make some extra cash.
Exactly.
And the Uber Lyft drivers, what specifically do they want?
I think they want, in Philadelphia, the Philadelphia Drivers Union and the Philadelphia Limousine Association have called for a few things, $20 an hour minimum wage, so they want a wage floor. They want to stop deactivation. So the other thing about this is Uber drivers and Lyft drivers are driving, and an algorithm all of a sudden deactivates them, which is the equivalent of firing them, and the drivers have no recourse and no way of getting back their job, and it's very hard and arcane to get in touch with Uber and Lyft. And so there's no real management. You're managed by an algorithm. And so and the algorithm also chooses to fire you because maybe you've come down 0.01 in
your
ratings. Exactly. And so I think they want to stop deactivation. And then they want Uber to not have the right, and Lyft, to not have the right to change the conditions of work. So in L.A., what started much of this was starting in L.A. when Uber decided to cut 25% or 25 cents, I'm not sure actually, per mile off Uber drivers. And that
off
led
their
to,
pay.
Off their pay, and that led to a strike on March 25th, symbolically. And then the May 8th strike was a follow-up strike that then spread.
Let me just quickly reintroduce you, and I'd love to hear from our listeners as well. Uber drivers or Lyft drivers or people that use these hailing services, that's Todd Wolfson, professor of journalism and media studies at Rutgers University, and again, co-director of the Media Inequality and Change Center. And we're talking about how to organize in the gig economy. And there was a series of work stoppages on Wednesday across the United States here in Philly, also around the world, protesting against things like low pay, deteriorating work conditions, broken promises. And I should add that Uber is doing their their bid for money on Wall Street today, looking, I think, for something like $90 billion. Let me read a comment from Bailey. I was at the rally and I'm currently an Uber driver. I think it's ridiculous that this company treats its only resource, its drivers, so poorly when top executives are taking home so much money.
Exactly. I mean, that's the problem, is Uber is built on drivers. It would not have a business without the drivers, but it treats them like second, third class citizens and is not really all that concerned when they're struggling to make a living. And so this is the core. We've seen it throughout time. It's not new, but this is a new phase of the struggle of workers to get some respect, some democracy in the workplace, and to be able to feed their families while working full time.
Is it because the owners or the management is heartless, or because we've got these algorithms that are essentially sort of running the business?
The algorithms are running the business in many ways, but the algorithms respond to the priorities of the people who own Uber. Technology is just a tool of the people who own the business. So it is a new business model. It's a new business model that they pitch is for people who are part-time. But that's just not the reality of it. I would say that it's the imperatives of Uber to make as much of a profit as possible and do that on the backs of drivers.
So people that use these services and enjoy the convenience and the cost, what should they do? I mean, if they want to stand in solidarity with their drivers, what do you do?
Well, first, I think it's important to mark that this will affect consumers as well. So the problems with Uber, one study has shown that in cities like Philadelphia, traffic has doubled with the rise of Uber and Lyft. So in fact, they just did a study in San Francisco that said 2/3 of the new traffic in San Francisco is due to Uber and Lyft, period.
Wow.
And that is not only like our quality of life trying to get around our cities, but it's also climate, right? Our climate change will be fed by this. So standing with workers is also standing for ourselves. And the last thing I'll say is when workers aren't making enough they don't get health care on the job, they end up in the emergency room, and we all pay that bill when Uber should be paying that bill. So I think a way to stand up, there is no strike now, and the workers are working, and I think they want people to use Uber and use cabs, so people certainly should. But people should stand up. And when there is a strike call, they should respect what people have called the digital picket line and not cross it, not use it. And people should let the companies know that they're concerned about the work conditions of the workers.
It's hard to strike, but even harder is to use the strike to get the things that you want. I mean, that has been – there's nothing new about that again. I mean, this is how you force benefits or you force better pay out of management.
Absolutely. No worker wants to strike, take off days, not make a living. It's never comfortable. But in order to move us all forward, some workers have taken it on themselves to stand up. And we have seen, again, massive gains just from May 8th. But also we've seen, and this is important, a global network developing. So folks who are organizing in London are in touch with the amazing organizers in Philadelphia, and they're talking. They're talking to the organizers in L.A., who are talking to the organizers in Chicago and New York. And so I think people are starting to problem solve together and figure out that while there are particularities to the struggle in Philadelphia, there's also a global problem, and we can face it together.
And is it Facebook? Is that the mode of communication?
I think there's a lot of modes. I think within cities, people have been using Facebook to organize drivers, certainly. I think in London, WhatsApp is an app that's really heavily been used. And Twitter has also been used. So people are using all sorts of models, and the networks and relationships are starting to be built. And one thing to flag about this is it is a workforce that doesn't get to see each other. There's no office they're going to. But when we've seen when they do get to know each other that they've been able to stand up. A good case of this is food couriers in throughout the UK and Europe work slightly differently than food couriers in the US. They all aggregate at one site. And they've built relationships at that site. And so they've built those relationships, they've built networks, and then when there's been problems, they've struck. And so there's been something like 45 work actions by food couriers in the UK and throughout Europe in the last 2 to 3 years. It's been a massive strike wave, and it's because those relationships have been built, and then they've been able to use social media once those relationships have built to say the the owner's doing X. Let's stand up now. And so relationships that are physical have really led to much better organizing.
Oh, that's so interesting. And Uber, as I understand it, wants to get into the food delivery business. I mean, they see that as part of their business model. And it should be said, it's a company that has not turned a profit yet. So.
It has not turned a profit yet. And yes, they do have Uber Eats. And Uber Eats is in operation here in Philly at this point. So, and again, the vision of the gig economy, right now we see it most with domestic workers, point-to-point transportation drivers, delivery, and with food delivery, but it's growing.
Yeah.
Many other sectors are looking at this model as a model that they want to in-house. Even like science labs are using and starting to look at the gig model as a way to bring in workers. So it's a little disturbing.
Here's an email from Steve. He says, I was a bike messenger for many years and worked for all different app-based companies. These companies claim to take responsibility for injuries on the job, but I never knew anyone to receive a payout.
Yes, and that's been a problem. It's been a problem in Philadelphia. Unfortunately, a food courier passed away. He was biking on the job for Caviar when he passed, and then there was a bunch of food couriers got together and they fought, and I think they did end up winning a little bit of a payout, maybe, but it was not. They did not take responsibility without the other food couriers stepping up and demanding it.
Well, Todd Wolfson, thank you so much for coming in and joining us today in Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And he's a professor of journalism and media studies at Rutgers University, co-director of the Media Inequality and Change Center. Go to WHYY.org/Radio Times to find out more about the program. You can download a podcast of the show, find us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Kelsey Hansen. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thank you so much for joining us.